Okay.
But you can't get radiation burns then?
No, you cannot get any hard radiation, alpha, beta, gamma, no such thing coming out. The maximum voltage at which those run before producing ozone is around 14,000 volts.
Mm-hmm.
And in open air, there's no vacuum there, so you're not likely to get any kind of radiation except the brush discharge, the corona that's producing the ions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We have problems with those here. You know, we thought it would be a good idea to have them in here.
Oh, they'd put out too much static, too much...
Well, there's also that the ozone level, with all of the electrical connections that are around here. You want to see a chief engineer go crazy.
Right.
Turn one of those on here to get rid of all of our cigarette smoke,
right? If the device has been made in the last 15 years, it won't produce any ozone. That's the first thing you have to look for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Some more on the health and heating. Can your brain tuners be used for seasickness or space sickness, possibly by the astronauts?
We kind of have an agreement. We're not going to talk about those tonight because the FDA is a little bit on the warpath, but I'll answer that for you privately. If you'd like to call Paul at 393-9405 and give me your home number.
Okay.
We're kind of limiting this to stuff that is legal, like biofeedback, which are passive devices. Mm-hmm. And we're going to play some brainwave simulation here in a few minutes.
By legal, we mean that it's been approved by the FDA.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's illegal if they haven't approved it. It's just that they don't understand it yet.
But they're pretty touchy about some of these new age things. They will cut into the profits, of course, of the medical trusts. So... at least the biofeedback doesn't. It's grandfathered.
You apparently were able to measure some real psychic healer types, and you said there were 7.8 hertz resonating with the natural Earth's electrical field, and I wonder why, if we're all exposed to it, why we aren't all psychic and why we could become benefited by having a brain tuner type thing or a similar device if we're not already sensitive to the natural background frequency.
That's a good question. If... we're going to talk about electronic shamanism Saturday, April 6th. Psychotronics. I'm the national president of the U.S. Psychotronics Association. Psychotronics is sort of electronic shamanism. It requires an interaction of the consciousness of the operator with the electronic device. And this is the problem. A lot of operators cannot get into that state. But with biofeedback training, when they listen to a tape of a particular frequency or modulated frequency and tune their brain to it, they become much more accurate and they can access these data, more readily. It's almost as though the mind is a hologram. And unless you tune it to a precise frequency, you don't get a coherent readout. That would be a metaphor. And yes, that's a very good question. What we did find was that in many cases, when we measured the Earth ionosphere cavity resonance, the Schumann resonance, and put that on a totally isolated track of a twin-track recorder, and measured the subject's brainwave, there was a phase lock during a particular time. It doesn't require long, just a few seconds, and the person has accessed the information, and then it might take half an hour to do something with the data. And it suggested that man as a biocosmic resonator was actually tuning to this magnetic pace setter, this circadian rhythm. So naturally, we wound some big coils and put a lot of subjects in a magnetic field that was considerably stronger than the natural ambient. And we were able to produce altered states. And, of course, you've heard Puharich talk about the experiments we did in 1977 and 78.
Back. Right, yeah.
And I was the guy that set that thing up, and Puharich, of course, thought it was a good idea, and we tried to alert the community that something was going on here. And this is when I came out of the closet and became very public and got involved with some of the spook types and some of the good guys and some of the bad guys, but at least we're talking about it.
So in other words, even if you're naturally exposed, say, before the age of radio, all the natives in the jungle throughout the world, they weren't all psychic and there was no modern electrical interference to interfere with their brain tuning. It's just that individuals are different, I guess, right?
I understand the Aborigines are far more psychic than we, and they use telepathy as one of their communication channels, and they're very close to nature. And primitive people apparently are far more sensitive to these minute signals, which incidentally are in the window range of about 125 microgauss, 125 millionths of, well, the Earth's ambient is about 0.4 gauss, presently the thing that makes your Boy Scout compass point north. So these signals are just very minute, but there's a window effect. If they're too strong, they won't work. If they're too weak, they won't work. We started out by winding huge Helmholtz coils, about 9 feet in diameter, and putting one on the ceiling, one on the floor, and one on the north wall and south and east and west. Then we found that we did far better with a point source. It was as though the brain, as Tom Bearden puts so eloquently, is a scalar detector. And the left and the right hemisphere, being in slightly different spatial relationships, can detect a near field more easily than a far field. So if you're working with this, Craig, you're better off using a point source than a uniform field.
Hopefully then with some artificial gadgetry, then a lot more of us could develop those potentials then with a nearby little unit.
Yes, I think you can. If you followed the work done at Menninger Foundation, the Greens, they believe that the theta state is the access portal, the window to altered states of consciousness. They've written some excellent books on this subject, and we highly recommend their work.
Okay, fine. Any more throughout the show, I'll be listening out there, if you get more details on the regrowing of limbs or the diagnosing or beaming beneficial rays into the people to cure plaque or tumors, I'd be interested here.
Our absolute saint in this area, of course, is Dr. Robert O. Becker, who pioneered this, and as I mentioned earlier, his book is available now, and I bought mine at the Bodhi Tree Bookstore, and it's called The Body Electric.
Mm-hmm.
And you, of all people, should run, not walk, and pick up a copy of this. They had only a few of them last week.
Great, great. Well, I know children can regrow the fingertips if they don't sew it up. They just bandage it, and the fingertips will grow out by themselves. But presumably he did better than that electrically.
Oh, yes, he has, and he can't talk about it, of course, because he did use some human subjects, and that's illegal. You're supposed to do many years of rat studies, and then you get approval from the FDA, and then only then can you use human subjects. This is where I broke the law a lot back 10, 15 years ago, because I used human volunteer subjects for some of the brainwave control that we were doing. And later in the show, we have a little brainwave amplifier here and the signal generator, and we'll play over the air the modulated tone of the psychic state, the alpha state, the theta state, the delta state. And you'll notice that the alpha-theta border, the 7.83 hertz, is the thing that's been used since the beginning of time as the tremolo, the vibrato in music. It's a very soothing sound, and it does cause alteration of consciousness.
Well, it's a shame that they can slap the wrists of the guys that implant an artificial heart that's not approved in a guy, and they can split open a little baby like a watermelon and implant a baboon heart where they know it's not going to work. They're just experimenting, and that's okay, but you can't have a little battery-operated radio device to hear
right.
things.
We're going for full FDA approval on the brain tuner, which is why we're keeping a very low profile on it. The company that makes them is doing all of the red tape work, Bechtech International, and we expect to have these things approved by the FDA in a few months, and so we're not doing anything to rock the boat in the meantime. The problem with that is once it is approved by the FDA, it's accessible only through a medical doctor on prescription, and undoubtedly the price will go up astronomically.
Well, you guys open a clinic in Tijuana, there's a lot of good groups appearing down there.
Good thinking, Craig.
It's not just Laetro now. There's all kinds of vaccines and stuff they got down there. Good stuff.
I know. Cellular therapy and Geravite, hello.
There's been vaccines against cancer going back 100 years, as documented in that cancer conspiracy little book by
right.
Pinnacle Books, and they've arrested them.
There's some horror stories about cancer that one of these days we'll tell you. They go back to 1929.
I know. I followed that for many years, Craig, and I'm in total agreement. I believe people should be given back to themselves, not delivered into the hands of another vested interest. But how are we going to do that?
Well, we will try our best to see that that comes to the surface.
Thank you for your time, Bill.
Thank you, Craig, for checking in. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me tonight is Dr. Robert Beck, and we're talking about some things that are on the borderlines of science, that it will be your future. And it would be well that you stay with us, and I hope you do. Jenkins, we're talking about the mind, among other things, and what can happen to it electromagnetically and magnetically, with Dr. Robert Beck is here. And Chris is on the line. Chris, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Well,
hi,
I want to tell you that I appreciate the guts that you have to have a show like this. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's not only me that has the guts, but it's George Green and Wally Sherwin and the American Broadcasting Companies.
Well, to all of you.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask you a straight-out question about something that ever since I became aware of the things that you deal in and talk about, Mr. Beard and Mr. Dini, Mr. Beck and others, something that's been bothering me, and it recurred again tonight when you talked about that soldier who spied that box and said, hey, when I was in the detention camp, etc. You know, I read the Soviet weaponization pamphlet Mr. Beard put out, and I was listening about what that soldier said, and I'm trying to understand how anybody with any reasonable objectivity can believe that this free nation and other free nations are going to be around for much longer without getting crushed or burnt up or frozen or whatever. Can you comment on that?
I understand what you're saying and where you're coming from, but you don't need to really worry that much. Although we talk about how foolish they are in Washington, and they are in many, many areas. They're not all dumbs up there.
Sure.
And there is a lot going on, enough going on to counter what's happening on the other side.
Do you really believe that?
Recently, that we can say that, I think.
I believe that this is true. This certainly wasn't the case when I surfaced in about 1973 to 77. I did a number of briefings back there, not only in the Pentagon, but for the intelligence communities. I actually demonstrated some of the apparatus. We set it up right there on their own turf, let them test it. At one of the briefings, the Senate Select Committee on Science and Technology showed up, totally uninvited, at a top-secret facility and walked in, and the fellow who had sponsored me back there was absolutely petrified, and he beckoned me out into the hall, and he said, well, what are we going to do? And I said, I don't know, it's your party. I said, I think we ought to tell them the truth, just continue the way we were. Apparently, the powers that be look at the elected officials as temporary, and behind the scenes, the powers that be continue to run their little tight ships one way or another. So I went ahead with the briefing, and here sat this contingency of about six stony-faced persons from wherever they came from, and they walked out, and I never heard a word from them since. But our sponsors, which were some of the agency people, were absolutely petrified that the Congress and Senate had taken an interest in this field. They thought that they had it pretty well sewed up on a rather secure basis. And you're right. When this gets into the wrong hands, it's just another thing to worry about. 150 years ago, it was smallpox, diphtheria, and Indians, and typhoid fever. And I believe that mankind simply evolves behind this. The problem up in Eugene, Oregon, eventually straightened itself out because a number of people were put on Dilantin, which is epileptic-type seizure control pharmaceutical, and the rest of them simply adapted.
Adapted or moved.
Or moved, right.
Some of them couldn't adopt, and there are a lot of people who can still go in that area, and it's troublesome for them.
Right.
I just read Mr. McCrae's book, Mind Wars, I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes, we're trying to get him on the show, but he's hiding away in London right now.
Yeah, he mentions, you know, the bunkers like Randy and, you know, people you're familiar with.
Right.
And he does give you pretty good press on this. What is his angle on this?
I really don't know. The problem today is sorting out your friends, allies, and opponents to determine who are the disinformation agents and who have which ones have a sincere interest in the field. And sometimes that's hard to do. I confronted the chief scientist for the U.S. Navy out at the Ross 80 conference 2 years ago. And I said, Sam, I understand you're a Soviet mole. And he knew who I was, and I knew who he was. And he said, well, come on, let's go out into the patio and let's talk about this. And he said, you know, Bob, I've heard this from many different sectors, but let me tell you why I had to fire the people who were doing the remote viewing experiments up at Stanford Research Institute. And after I talked to him for about 20 minutes, by golly, I had to agree with him. Maybe he was right. So it is terribly, terribly difficult to know who's on first, particularly if you're just a civilian as I am. And by their fruit shall ye know them. Let's see what this person is doing with this bit of information and where it pops up again. It's really Spooksville out there, and any new technology is the same way, but this is particularly lethal knowledge. And sometimes you just don't know how much of this is true, how much of it is simply a fabrication. But I would suggest you do your own experiments.
Yes, we are all still free agents. You know, you're mentioning Randy and the skeptics in that group. We're planning a show in July in which we are contacting the skeptics. That's Randy, that's...
Well, why don't you call them what they are? They're inquisitors.
Well, there is a very healthy need for a very healthy skeptic, particularly whenever you're out on the outer edge like that.
They stimulate...
Good skepticism is absolutely vital.
Are they going beyond that, though?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, there's a check and balance here, and that's the reason I want to get them and Edwin Krupp and some of the people that are part of the skeptics, because for the most part, I don't know Randy, but I know Edwin, for instance. He's truly sincere about what he does and, you know, in dealing with the extraterrestrials and space and all of that sort of thing. But we'll try to get them on with their counterparts, and that'll be in July sometime. So we, Richard Chavez, who's my program coordinator, is working on that one, and I think it'll be a stimulating show. And I think they're necessary, and I think they're vital, because otherwise, those of us that find ourselves here on the outer edge can really get our heads in the clouds and start chasing moonbeams.
Chris, let me give you an example of where does the information go, down the rabbit hole or what have you. In 1965, there was an experimenter at Brain Research, UCLA, named Joseph Hamer, H-A-M-E-R. And he pasted a couple of pieces of Reynolds aluminum foil, one on the ceiling, one under the rug, and had run the output of an audio signal generator to these, and was only running from about 0.2 volts RMS down to 0.02 volts between these two pieces of tin foil. Invited students in from the hall and had given them a slight reward to run through some reaction time tests. And, by the way, this study has been published in clinical encephalography journals and many, many hardcore scientific references. He found that when the signal generator put out a frequency of around 3 to 5 hertz, the reaction time was nearly doubled. That meant that the person was working only at about half speed. When he tuned the signal generator to 9 hertz, the reaction time was speeded up. Now, this paper was published as Entrainment of the Human Brain by the Northrop Corporation. I happened to get a copy of it before it was classified, fortunately, so I can disseminate it legally. But if you call Northrop, that paper just simply doesn't exist. It has been totally swallowed up by the system. I can show it to you. I have copies of it. The experiment has been replicated by any number of other scientists. Now, 0.02, 0.01/100 of 1 volt RMS between a couple of pieces of tinfoil in your office can mean the difference between performance or just plain depression, lassitude, laziness, and you name it.
You now, can actually tune your... You can tune anybody's, or you can tune your own mental state.
What happens if you have a little device in your briefcase, you're at the board meeting, and you want the opposition to look silly? You hit button one, and when your guy comes up, you hit button number two. This has been known since 1965. We can give you the medical references to these studies. Now, just think how far this technology has probably been developed by the industrial sector, not to mention the military, intelligence, community, etc.
Imagine what that would do in a courtroom.
Right.
Can I leave you with one thought?
Sure.
This is something I just read recently, and I think it applies to all the things I've been hearing on the show. This is a quote. Probably more scientists have been adversely affected, stopped altogether from a given line of research, guided, shaped, propelled, decelerated, forced into non-publication secrecy, turned down for funds or promotion, and barred from access to laboratory space or archives because of defiance of conventional wisdom in America since World War II, with its accompanying bureaucratization and politicization of science than existed in the whole of the world in Galileo's day. What Galileo endured is nothing compared to what bold, intrepid young minds face in today's scientific circles, where a given paradigm or program brands all simple difference of viewpoint as idiosyncratic, nonsensical, futile, and troublemaking, the modern synonyms for medieval heresy. And I read that and I thought, oh, there it is.
Who wrote that? Because he was on target.
That was Mr. Robert Nisbet in his book, Prejudices.
Oh, there you go.
Ron did not walk to the buddy tree and got Robert O. Becker's book. He has an entire chapter on the tribunal when his peer group was reviewing the heresy that he was performing. Of course, he's been vindicated, but that's the way it goes.
We're beginning to see it break down a little bit.
I think so. I think maybe you... You would have been shut down in the 30s or 40s just as eagerly as Mr. Tesla was.
Oh, this show could not have happened 10 years ago. But we see successes. What comes to mind is our friend John C. Bedini's little book, his little device. It works.
Okay.
It produces an awful lot of energy from nothing, it seems like.
And that was a year to a year and a half to production, did he say?
Yeah, that'll be coming along fine. But it has been a very, very difficult job to
Who's going to write the book about that? Who's going to write the book about the wiretapping and the mail opening and the threatening?
I suppose I'll write that book because I'm gathering that evidence and it affects me also.
I can't wait.
And we'll talk about it openly much more than we have in the past. But
I know you're not. I know you're not talking, but I know you'll talk someday.
Oh, you better believe it.
Chris, come on down to our seminar next week, April 6th at the airport, L.A. Airport Marriott Hotel, and you better get reservations. Call Paul at 393-9405. Because we're expecting quite a turnout.
Well, wild horses and bureaucrats couldn't keep me away.
Terrific. And introduce yourself, by the way.
I'll do that.
So, let's see what got to know you. That's area code 213-393-9405. And we'll be talking about a lot of this stuff and demonstrating some of it, that we can talk about legally, and just showing slides of the things that we can't have on us. So... should be an interesting Saturday.
I'll be there.
All right, Chris, thank you very much for your call and
thank
your participation and your interest. It always makes us feel good to know that it's happening out there with a lot of you. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind.
I bought some sitar records, you know, the Indian classical instrument.
Sure.
And I listen to them sometimes, and I experience a very tranquil, good feeling of well-being.
Oh, they've known these things for thousands of years over there.
Yes, I was wondering, is there some reason for that as far as alpha waves or...
Well, that's a pretty good lead-in, because right here on the table in front of me, I have a little signal generator, and I have an encephalographic EEG brainwave amplifier. And if you'd like, we can simulate some of these sounds, and let's see what happens to you.
Okay.
Now, let's hope everything works here. This is live, not on tape.
Yeah, we're live and in living color here. As Bob turns on us. Here we are.
Now, the mean median mode frequency of human alpha is around 10 hertz. And what we've done is modulated a voltage-controlled oscillator with an exactly 10 hertz signal that sounds like this. Now, the range of human alpha goes from about 8 hertz... up to beyond about 12. If we fall down at this magic number, which is 7.83, which is about halfway between the theta, the upper theta, and the lower alpha.
That's Earth resonance, right?
This is the Schumann, the principal note of the Earth resonance. If we fall down into the delta, you can see why police sirens, ambulances, and what have you have this particular signal, because it alerts you on an unconscious level. If you're having an epileptic seizure, you'll show delta spiking somewhere down here around 3 to 4 hertz, which sounds like this. Now, the theta band, which the Menningers and Camilla and many other people have found, the Elmer and Elise Green, is the band of creativity and accessing cosmic consciousness, sounds like this. In other words, if you amplified the brainwaves, your little natural encephalographic signals with electrodes on the outside of your scalp, and you heard this, you'd know that you were in theta. If you heard this, you'd know that you were in alpha. And then beta, which is the normal state of consciousness in which we find ourselves with our eyes open when our attention is focused, is anywhere from 14 to 20, 26 hertz. And as we calm ourselves and go down into the alpha, Your brainwave will sound like this if you're listening to an amplified modulated signal.
We're going to mellow out the town here, Bob.
And the theta. And as we probably know, the sitar music, etc., uses a lot of these natural resonances. That's sort of a quick demonstration of what you can do with your brainwaves with a couple of hours of biofeedback training.
There was a very interesting body of work done about 25 years ago by Dr. Armand LaFrance. I believe it was at UCLA. He was a musician as well as a physicist. And he wrote music utilizing these principles, which would cause you to react exactly the way he wanted you to react by listening to the music.
Fantastic.
He could, I remember listening to him as a very young man in Palm Springs, and if you wanted to be excited, fine. If you wanted to really mellow out, and it was just music. But each one of those notes was crafted in the music to do a specific thing.
The classic example of this is a record called Rainbow in Curved Air by Terry Riley, and we're using a couple of tracks from Rainbow in Curved Air at the demonstration next Saturday. We're playing these soundtracks behind the mandalascope, and we'll let you experience precisely what some of these musical tones can do. I wish I had done that one myself, but it's a perfect example of what Bill's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Does that help you, Larry?
Yes, it does. And I was just wondering, what causes the... Is there a physiological reaction within your brain that that these different waves somehow cause... some kind of stimulation physiologically?
Actually, yes. The way, if your doctor suspects that you are an epileptic and sends you to a hospital that has a clinical encephalographic department, there are two ways of testing you. One is to flash a strobe light at your eyes at a particularly particular frequency called the epileptic flicker rate. And this photic stimulus can normally drive your brain into delta spiking, and that tells you positively that, yes, you have it. The other way is chemical. You probably remember back in the 60s, a number of psychedelic nightclubs had lawsuits against them because people who never suspected they were epileptics would go in, the flashing lights would trigger a petit mal, a grand mal seizure. And I know the Electric Circus in New York City had a number of problems before they sort of locked the strobe lights onto more benign frequencies. Now, that brainwave entrainment can be stimulated by light, epileptic flicker, photic stimulation. It can be stimulated by sound, click stimulus at certain frequencies, and it can definitely be triggered by magnetic fields. And this is the thing that we're worried about.
The digital square wave also, a broadcast digital square wave will... Your skin picks that up, actually. It's a good receiver of it, and it can start doing things.
The problem in our complex society is that the brain is a nonlinear mechanism, mixes all of the heterodynes. If you have a squirrel cage blower in the air conditioner on the roof, and it's rotating at a certain frequency, and it's not degaussed, there's some residual magnetism in the blades, and you have a motor running in the Xerox machine, and the washing machine, and the elevator... The sum and difference of these frequencies, the harmonics of them, can sometimes fall in these windows. And we found this in a number of office buildings where people who were sensitive to this type of radiation, which happens to the population is about 35% of the gross human population, these people will get nauseous, have headaches, have very short attention spans, undergo depression, sort of pregnancy, whether they're men, women, or children, morning sickness. And we have developed magnetic detectors, which I'm sure you're aware of. You can build these quite inexpensively, that detect the H vector, the magnetic fields that are causing some of the sickness, and we call it the new occultism, the hidden factors in health and disease. You can't smell them, you can't taste them, you can't see them, but with the proper electronic instrumentation, you can certainly detect them.
It's our own electronic and magnetic smog that's around.
Right.
And particularly in a city like Los Angeles, it is intense. One of the reasons that you feel so good when you get up in the mountains.
Exactly.
It's not the vista, and it's not the clear air. You have cleared yourself of all of these other influences which are really affecting your body.
And you just don't realize it till you get away from it. Oh.
Yes, I've noticed that in Arizona and southern Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but when I've gone on some trips there, it seems seems like there's something that just brings this feeling of clarity that I don't normally experience.
You're away from the smog. And
yeah,
we're talking about the electronic smog, not the the smog we see and smell.
But it's actually, I see. Yeah, because in this L.A., for some reason, it just...
Any city.
Back about 12 years ago, we did some interesting experiments. We took one of our first rather primitive magnetometers that consisted of a huge coil of very fine copper wire and some extremely low-noise amplifiers around to various spots where people felt good and felt bad. And sure enough, we found that the standing waves of the Schumann resonances were predominant at places like American Indian Magical Burial Grounds up in the Joshua National Monument area and Brew Joy.
Brew, yeah.
Right. Had me come up, and we checked the Sky High Ranch area, and we found that the vibes up there were just absolutely marvelous, so he used that.
Right, it's 7.83, right?
Right. And you can move a few hundred feet and be totally out of this, and the geophysicists know that it depends on the iron ore concentration in the soil and the standing waves and all of these variables, but you can detect this. You can actually measure it when you have the right equipment.
Can you build a transmitter that would transmit that around you?
Yes, and we've done that, and this little blue box right here, which we don't talk about too much, puts out the exact magnetic field that you need. This is the one we demonstrate in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we have skeptics... at a conference a while back, we demonstrated that from the back of the room, we could control the brainwaves of the
just
volunteers.
Just mellow them out right there on the spot.
Right. We'd have volunteers wire up on a Tektronix encephalograph and an oscilloscope, and we had a number of skeptics in the audience at many of these demonstrations. And I would turn this little box and double blind, say, okay, now we're going to put out a X encephalographic signal and now a Y. And this has been thoroughly tested, thoroughly replicated. It's not snake oil anymore. It's scientifically validated.
It's a little tough for some of the bureaucrats to figure it out, you know, but they will come along, we hope.
Well,
does that help you, Larry?
Yes, it does.
All right.
Thank you very much. Keep up the good work. I enjoy the show.
Thank you. Thank you for contributing to it. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Dr. Bob Beck. It's open mind. Rick, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you. Excellent program tonight. You had a number of fine calls. I'm a kind of an amateur dowser, and I'm fascinated in the whole area of extreme low frequency. And I've got a couple of maybe elementary questions to ask, and I'm wondering if the 7.83 hertz is the standing frequency for the planet or whether it's a frequency which is kind of universal.
Okay, that's a good question. In about the late 1950s, Dr. W. O. Schumann, S-C-H-U-M-A-N-N, postulated that since the Earth was a capacitor, we have an ionosphere, we have a layer of air that's a good dielectric, and then we have the ground itself. And since this is being pumped by lightning strokes and what have you, it should ring like a bell. And he postulated that the principal node was around 10 hertz. Well, when it was actually measured in the early 1960s by the National Bureau of Standards, the principal nodes were 7.8 hertz, 14.1, 22, 23, etc. And the highest amplitude signal is at that 7.8 hertz. Now, this changes a little bit with climate, with sunspot activity, with lunar tides, which also affect the ocean tides, as you know.
Which explains why people act strange in a full moon, huh?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the first one to postulate this maybe 14 years ago, and it sounded like nonsense then, but enough work's been done to replicate this since. And come around to the Dowsers group sometime. Vince Weiberg and the Dowsers of Los Angeles County, Dolek, meets first Saturday of every month at Plummer Park and meet some more Dowsers. And
we do a
whole lot of things besides dowsing.
I might like to do that. Since humans have developed on the planet, and obviously the two hemispheres of the brain are generating a standing wave themselves, like quartz crystals, do also, are they all tied, all related simply to the Earth as the parent?
We don't know. We believe that there are certain people who, by dint of meditation, religious practices, or what have you, have developed the ability to tune into this, and they act like dual conversion superhets. The rest of us are crystal sets.
I see.
But if you practice meditation and particularly biofeedback, you can actually tune to some of these key frequencies. Now, people interested in psychotronics have actually done this and found that, sure enough, their performance goes up. People interested in remote viewing, astral travel, and what have you have actually done this. It takes about 4.5 hours, and it's darn hard work. And you can buy biofeedback units from Edmunds Scientific or from almost anyone in the field. And just do it. Try it. Tell me how you like it.
Okay. What are ley lines, and how would they tie into this standing wave?
Okay, there's a tremendous amount of interest in grid, ley lines, etc., and, of course, Stonehenge. If you followed Bruce Cathy's work, which isn't particularly mathematically sound, dowsers are just now beginning to find a commercial outlet for their talents in finding if you're sleeping over geopathogenic zones, which they believe are connected with...